This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Tatenda Maredza, Zimbabwean political analyst. We'll be talking about all things Zimbabwe and all things elections in that particular country. And so, yes, let's just go straight to Zimbabwe at this particular point. Tatenda, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, Tatenda. And it's brilliant. Do you have electricity, Tatenda?
Yes, just one point of correction. Sorry to disappoint. Not in Buri. I'm in Harare.
Then I'm going to correct that on my list here, and that's in Harare.
You're right.
Yes, you have electricity. You know, we struggling with something that you used to struggle with, and something that you still struggle with. I think electricity in that particular country, and it's become a major issue of concern here, and I'm sure you know about it.
No, absolutely. And it has become a bragging point with my friends because I stay on a hospital grid, also known as a priority grid. So yes. I never not have electricity unless it's a fault. So it's one of those things where I'm like, what? What do you mean power cuts? Because I never actually have power cuts. What is that?
Yeah, Tatenda, you know what? I think that's how people are going to buy houses next time around. Every time they look for houses next time.
It's a selling point for real estate.
Absolutely, you know. And then you're going to put up a for sale sign outside your house, and you're going to say, you know what? We're actually on a national grid. We're on this grid, and there's no load shedding yet. And people are going to say, I want that house. I really want that house.
No, strategic grids should possibly be more expensive than any other grid because, well, you have electricity, you have water. Like, I don't do bucket baths, so there's that, you know?
bucket baths.
Yeah, it's a Zimbabwe thing.
It's a South African thing too, you know?
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
When I left South Africa, we didn't have those problems many, many years ago.
Yes. No, but I'm not saying it's a general thing daily, you know, but there are people who grew up with bucket baths, you know, and after having, you know, your bucket bath, you take the water and you throw it outside and, you know, the next person would have the bucket bath.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Absolutely.
All the mighty have fallen.
Yes. How the mighty have fallen. South Africa, listen to somebody in Zimbabwe talking about you. How the mighty have fallen. I didn't think a Zimbabwean would ever tell me that one day. How the mighty have fallen.
Okay, but, now you're raiding it too far. Like, stop.
Tatenda, how are you though?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very, very good. Tatenda, let's start off with something that's absolutely important in your country, and it's a general election. Yeah. And I think the last one that was held in your country was July 31st, 2018, right?
Yes.
That would have been 5 years ago. So it's a five-year term, right? Just like ours would be. Have you got a date? You know, from everything I read, I'm reading in July, I'm reading in August, you know, and the ZEC has not pronounced on that yet. But do you have something closer to a date for me than those particular 2 months that I have, July or August?
No, so basically what those months mean is it's a limitation in terms of the time frame when we expect our general election to be.
Yeah.
So it'll be any time towards the end of July. It's more of a 1 month period, so any time towards the end of July to the end of August, that is the timeline we expect our general elections to be held.
Yeah.
No, there hasn't been an official date
because I think there's a constitutional obligation also because it's tied to that 5 year term.
Yes, that is where the limitation is. It's a constitutional limitation.
Mm.
Yes.
So July and August, but the ZEC, the Zimbabwean Electoral Commission, has not pronounced on a particular date yet.
No, not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
So then I'm still fine with my date. Let's talk then about this, and I want to talk more or less maybe a little from the back towards the front. Let's talk about your Zimbabwean Electoral Commission then. and not having yet announced. Is that something, you know, that Zimbabweans are concerned about, that there's no election date yet? Or do you think it's a strategy at play? And when I say that, I'm opening the conversation to various things that, you know, influence political parties and or political spaces, you know, because even by not announcing on a particular date will either maybe favor a particular organization or not. Are Zimbabweans concerned about the fact that they don't have a date yet, or is this particularly a norm? You know, July and August is not too far away.
Well, I would say not particularly. Of course, people are concerned. Mm. But if you study the electoral pattern, particularly with the ED administration, remember he came into power with a coup that wasn't really a coup type of conversation that we have.
Yeah.
And everyone expected him to not announce elections when they were supposed to happen because they thought, you know, he would want to have a bit more time in power, prove himself, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. But elections were held towards the end of July, August.
That's it.
That was the same particular time frame.
Mm.
So the announcement also came somewhat at the 11th hour.
Yeah.
So we can say it's a pattern with the current administration. They do, you know, play around with a bit of a cloak and dagger approach to how they do things.
Mm.
It's always everything you're kept guessing until it happens.
Mm.
So it seems to be synonymous with the Mnangagwa way of doing things.
Sure. And then also the voters' role seems to be following the same pattern. You know, opposition parties. The CCC, the Citizens Coalition for Change, here some time back, and they were saying to me, you know, that they having particular problems like the announcement of the date and also the voters' roll, which then is not made generally public, you know, until maybe the last minute. And so, you know, but access to it from a governmental, you know, side would mean that they would have an advantage and the CCC ultimately would not, because, you know, you can't begin to campaign like you think you would. So also in that particular space, the voters' role also seeming to be following the same pattern where it gets released rather very, very late.
Absolutely. But we cannot ignore the fact that the CCC has become the party that cries wolf ever so frequently.
Yeah.
Because I do not know for a fact if the CCC party, the main opposition party, has held its primary elections in actually releasing their final candidates for the election. So you may cry about the election and whether the voters' roll has been released, but the party in itself has not equally shown us that their house is in order.
Mm.
So you cannot cry about the national database when you are not showing the citizens or your voters that you are equally ready to come to the party should the party be announced.
Mm.
Yeah, so they always have these dances with them every now and again, and it's becoming very frustrating and disappointing for a lot of people because you expect, you know, when you have a ruling party that's doing not too much, the opposition has a lot to play with.
Mm.
So the least they can do is actually show that they have capacity to play the game at a national level.
Mm. Is that coming across as a weakness on their side, that whole governance within a political party, that whole structural, you know, element of a political party? Is it coming across as a problem that they particularly have for the CCC?
No, absolutely. Because to be clear, Zimbabwe, like many, many nations across, is a bipartisan society. So it's either or.
Mm.
But when or is behaving like either, then you are left with a lot, like you are questioning the whole concept, the whole principle, because they are showing, like I said, the ruling party has you know, fallen short in so many aspects.
Yeah.
And you can only come up with just bare minimums to show your capacity to top or even to do better than the previous administration. But if you're coming in and you are behaving in a manner that shows that, number one, you're not really pursuing democratic processes. Number two, you don't even have a proper system and structure that one can follow through with. Then one is left wondering, are we really just wanting opposition for the sake of opposition? Do they even have capacity to bring anything new? Or you're bringing a young dictator who simply has more years to be in power as opposed to the older guys that are almost at the end of their clock?
Yeah,
so because we have started interrogating these issues as Zimbabweans because they have not really shown us much to go with in terms of what they're actually bringing to the table.
You've just brought up the age, you know, when people are close to their clock. And so Mnangagwa is 79, Nelson Chamisa is 44. Does that play a role in how people decide? Is it a big factor? And I see the point you're making. If you're younger and you really, really do want the job, you should be behaving in a very different way. But and particularly if you're young and you've got so many years ahead of you, the question then is do Zimbabweans actually look at the age of someone and begin to make that a decision based on how they will vote? One is 44, that's Nelson Chamisa, and the other one is 79.
I guess we're now drawing onto the issue of also voter apathy, because the younger voters, your youthful voters, are supposed to look at those factors. A younger leader is more likely to represent your needs and your requirements better than a geriatric in the game. But also voters do not see the point of registering to vote because, number one, they feel like it's not really a democratic process.
Yeah.
And number two, the opposition isn't necessarily giving the young voter enough an incentive to say, look, we are here, we are ready, and we are willing to play the game at the level that it needs to be played at. So there isn't enough an incentive for the younger voter to come to the table. Like the other day, I'm low-key embarrassed to say it, not for myself, but for my family. I had to take my my niece that I stay with, as well as my domestic worker, the one the lady who helped me here. I bribed her. There wasn't a problem. She just wasn't a registered voter because she wasn't at the time. And I'd never had this conversation with her. And my niece, I said, are you registering to vote? And she says, no, I'm not. I'm like, okay, I'm going to pay you to register to vote. I didn't even explain to her why she needed to register to vote.
Yeah.
I just created an incentive for her to register to vote.
But it shows you.
It shows you.
Yeah, it shows you how the youth view the politicians that have been there and who are occupying the stage.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it's sad because she is 25 and she should be engaging in the politics of the day, in the issues that concern her next day or tomorrow. But she's not concerned because she has no faith in the political system on any level. But she's willing to register to vote if it, you know, satisfies her immediate need.
Tatenda, I'm going to have to go to the news, but we'll continue the conversation after that. And before I go to the news, I'd want to say also, I think you're going to have to bribe her again on the particular day to say, you know, now it's voting day. You know, show me that you actually voted and you'll...
Don't worry, I'll show up. I'll do the thing.
We are in Zimbabwe this evening. We're talking about the Zimbabwean elections, the general elections that are scheduled in that country for, of course, constitutionally, for July or August. And that's the five-year term that, of course, will dictate that the election be held either in August, in July or August. My guest, of course, is Tatenda Maredzwa, and she is in Harare, Zimbabwe. And we've had an interesting chat so far, some very, very insightful conversation so far, and I'm learning quite a bit also about various aspects of the Zim election. Things that you take for granted sometimes will be shown up when you do have a conversation of this particular nature. There's a lot of, you know, scripture out there. There's a lot of readings that you can go to, but ultimately then, you know, a conversation of this kind just brings you to a different space and you say, oh, I didn't think about that. And, you know, I didn't think about this. And so here we are. So Tatenda, welcome back to Power 98.7. Tatenda's cynicism It's that thing that, you know, when you begin to think that things are now going to be, you know, work out right, things are going to follow a certain pattern, there might be, you know, elements of democracy when they were not democracy. And then cynicism, you know, is that thing that says, yeah, okay, you know, guess what, it's going to be same-o. How much of that is around in this particular election where people are just cynic about either the election or the kind of results that you know the election is going to show? You, if you speak to somebody in that particular space, somebody would say, oh, of course, you know, the results already penciled in, they already know the numbers, they already know who the, you know, who's going to win, and so, you know, what's the point, but we're going to go through the motion anyway. That element of cynicism, is it around, or is there a new hope this time around that, you know, elements of democracy, elements of normality, you know, are returning?
Look, I would argue that elements of cynicism have existed in the Zimbabwean election season or results since 2008. Mm. Because any honest, whether it's a student of politics or anyone who has really understood how things function in Zimbabwe would say ZANU-PF absolutely lost in 2008.
Mm. Was that with the Morgan Tsvangirai?
Yes. Mm. And the rerun election and everything else that happened after the fact was a lot of, you know, this and that, that and this. And from then, it has been clear that democracy or I guess the idea of it will remain an idea for a while.
Mm.
So cynicism has been a major contributing factor since the 2008 elections, because a democratic process was held, and the people spoke, and the voice of the people was not acceptable to the powers that be.
Mm. And let's go to that election. And I was in your country at that particular point as well. That election gave Robert Mugabe, I think, 50-51%. That's what the ZEC gave to him. And obviously everybody was thinking that was the threshold by which you needed to win. So it was give him the 50% and give Morgan any other figure that won't make up that number. And I think everybody in that particular country viewed that as a result that, you know, wasn't the true result of what had happened at that particular poll. Let's go to the last election in 2018, though, and then Mangangwa gets 50.8%, Nelson Chamisa gets 44.3%. And that result there again just looks like that 50+1% just to get over the hurdle. And it seems that there's this pattern in Zimbabwe that, you know what, when we are narrow or when we're losing or whatever, you will give me just that threshold that I absolutely need, and you will give the other guy anything, any single number below that, and they'll be happy with that. That's still the cynicism, questionable kind of results thing. That results of 50.8% and 44.3%, do you think that was a true reflection of that particular election in 2018 with Emmerson?
I will argue that was a true representation of the stats on the ground in terms of voters for the ZANU-PF party and MDC. Based on the fact that post 2017 and the events of November 2017, there was absolute hope within the people of Zimbabwe that it's not a matter of changing the political outfit from ZANU-PF to the MDC, but it's a matter of passing on the baton to the next leader and capacitating the next person to take over and lead. So there was hope within the people of Zimbabwe that Mnangagwa was indeed a representation of a new dispensation, that he did have the capacity to take over. I genuinely believe, and not just believe, but I did witness on the front line key mistakes that were made by ZANU-PF and the ruling party post-election before the official announcement of the results, particularly the response to the protests that were happening in Harare, and opening fire on citizens. Mm. It was, you know, you move 10 steps forward and back. But everyone was believing the script. Everyone was ready to accept. Mm. And I genuinely believe Mnangagwa won. The figures that he had are official. There was no compromise in terms of the numbers, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. He really did have a lot of positive energy and positive expectations from the population. But that was a defining moment for his administration, for his first election, for his first term in office, to show would he be different from the different administration. The stories that are spoken of ED and his capacity to be violent, et cetera, are they true or not? Mm. Whether he's the one who gave the go-ahead for open fire for the soldiers, the military, to intervene in a domestic matter, that's a conversation for another day. But the fact is, it happened on his watch, and it became a clear indication of his capacity to control or to govern in the next 5 years. Mm. So it changed the dialogue again, and everyone had a bad case of amnesia or deja vu. I don't know what you want to call it.
Sure.
But it seemed like a proper, Robert Mugabe, you know.
Mm. We had moved 10 steps forward. We genuinely accepted that was the result, and then the brutality came back.
Yeah. The coup needed to happen. The coup that was not a coup needed to happen. Mugabe had his day in office, had had his months. He was done. He was played out.
Yeah.
We were ready to accept anything, so long as they showed minimum capacity to take us to the next stage. But that became a defining moment for him, because it became very clear that he still represents key elements of the old administration. Events did not have to happen the way they played out post that election. The military did not need to be involved at any level in this issue, and that was a terrible event, but it also defined him and his capacity. I genuinely believe he won the election based on the fact that even after Chamisa challenged the election results, they took him to court, they took ZANU-PF to court, they actually didn't really have anything to go with to actually show proper evidence in the V11 that they kept on, you know, riling up the population and saying, no, we actually have evidence. ZANU-PF is always organized to the T in terms of structural organization, from cell level to ward level to constituency level. They are organized. They are a party that has, it's machinery, it's a system that has been functional since the 1980s, since the 1960s, when they were just an opposition, another party trying to change the politics of the day. Mm. So they have been refining and working on their system. I can tell you for a fact, when ZANU-PF lost their election when they won 2018, they won, yes, but they were already looking at the areas and the different places that they need to make adjustments in order to improve their numbers going into the next election. That's the kind of system that ZANU-PF is.
And this is the next election that we're now talking about.
This is the next election. This is where we're at. But in 2018, they were already looking and analyzing where they went wrong and what they need to do differently. And we are looking at CCC that was MDC then broke down and is a new party, which is saying it's a citizens' movement. So they're not doing structures on the level that we understand them in political organization. But we are people that function with a particular mentality and a way of doing things. We are conditioned to see politics and to appreciate it in a particular way. So when you come at me and say, oh, I want to be a leader, but we're doing things differently, we are not there yet.
You know, Nigeria had election pretty recently, and of course the results also, you know, contested as they are in that particular country. But there was a lot of disappointment also from observers, or a lot of people not so much in the outcome of the result, not challenging the particular numbers, but the process also. You know that you never get to a process where the electoral authorities, you know, just uphold and are responsible to, you know, the actual people on the ground. So the electoral authorities in that particular country, disappointing also for a lot of people who thought that all the gains that have been made in Nigeria all along, you know, the route towards that particular election, and then only to be dashed at the last moment when the electoral authorities begin to be playing games and all of that. So that's the Nigerian story. But Nigeria had put in a lot of place and had made a lot of advances towards, you know, this particular election. In Zimbabwe, it doesn't seem that particular way. You know, it seems that the mood is the same as previous elections, the characteristic of the things that you've just been talking about. And so those electoral gains haven't been made. And so you go into a particular election, this election, not too enthusiastic about, you know, what happened previously and what could happen now, just purely because of, you know, these electoral authorities just letting people down. Do you sometimes see, you know, other countries advancing like Nigeria? The result is the result, but, you know, then the electoral authorities do what they need to do. And Zimbabwe, where the mood is very, very different, I would say. It's more same-o. The characters are the same. The games are the same. There are no electoral advancements. You know, the electoral authority seems to be politicized in the same way that, you know, it's been before. And that's the status quo.
Absolutely, 100%. I think Zimbabwe suffers from a typical case of Stockholm Syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have... when you're used to being treated a particular way and you don't see the need to be outraged by anything other than what you already know, you're used to suffering, you're used to not having your rights acknowledged in a room. So, for instance, like the current commissioners in 2021, part of the new commissioners, and the daughter of the former vice president, Abigail Millicent Mohadi, Ambrose, the full name, is part of the new commissioners coming into 2022, 2023. In any system, I would believe that should be absolutely outrageous. Look, because I belong to the political circles and I'm engaged in this conversation, I can say there was a bit of one or two eyebrows were raised and people were like, no, this is unacceptable. But the conversation did not go to a point where people are actually able to say, whilst it's acceptable, is it just, is it right? Are we really moving in the right direction when you have the daughter of the former vice president who belongs to ZANU-PF, whose father is part of ZANU-PF Politburo, which is the main executive branch of ZANU-PF, as a commissioner in ZIC, and that is acceptable to the opposition, to the country? That is, to me, that sounds outrageous. Yeah. I would think we should say no. Because of who you are, because of where you're coming from, because of the dynamics of where we're coming from, this should be unacceptable. We have a former commissioner from 2018 elections, Dr. Kubani Moyo, who is now contesting under the ZANU-PF ticket for Insizwe North in Matabeleland. And you're like, okay, but you're a commissioner. You're supposed to represent free and fair elections. And now you're aligned to ZANU-PF on that level where you want to, you're on the ticket to be a member of parliament under ZANU-PF. Whilst you're allowed to, because, you know, you quit ZEC, it's also a representation of the organization and where it's coming from and whose interests it really serves. So we don't have these conversations because it's allowed. He can contest as a ZANU-PF candidate, but is it morally right? We don't have those conversations yet in Zimbabwe. We're not outraged by such things. We accept it and we congratulate him and we say he has moved on. He has left ZIC and now he has joined a party. And I'm sure he ran the numbers. Look, he was in ZIC. He's even contesting in Insizwe North, which I'm sure is very clear that he's going to win and be a parliamentarian. So what are we saying at the end of the day?
What's Emerson's legacy going to be, do you think? And I'm not ruling him out for winning another term, but just over the last 5 years or so, just, you know, taking over from Robert. What kind of legacy, and you used the phrase whereby, you know, you were beginning to suggest what type of individual is he? What type of individual do Zimbabweans generally view him to be as he heads into this particular election? He's had 5 years or a little bit more than that, you know, to showcase himself. Who is he ultimately in the eyes of Zimbabweans?
Okay. So I initially belonged to the group of optimists in terms of I genuinely have given his administration a chance. Mm. They have let me down in areas that they could have done differently.
Tatenda, I hate to break it to you, but politicians will do that.
Thank you. That hurts. You didn't have to do that. You absolutely didn't have to do that. But we like to believe in the goodness of all people.
Absolutely, like as one does.
We are nothing without hope.
As one does, Tatenda. As one does. So you had lots of hope. Mm.
I really did, because I'm like, look, it's a chance to keep things in the family, as in the Zanu-PF family.
Yeah.
But show that the party in itself has capacity to bring something new to the table. Mm. But I think drawing on to particularly number one, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch it yet, the Al Jazeera documentary that just came out. Like it's the timing. It couldn't be more impeccable in terms of, you know, political reading the political climate. Mm. So it's that the conversation on corruption, the conversation around cartels having so much power, having so much capacity, and controlling the economic atmosphere, and the conversation how even policy is implemented in the country has become such a clear issue. So the ED administration had a chance to implement proper public policy and administration, but we have seen the rise and the glorification of cartelism in this country. So your gold buyers and people of no clear, you know, definition in terms of like what it is they actually do, they have really taken the center stage. Even in terms of, I appreciate ZANU-PF for reading the room in the sense that they have included a lot of young political aspirants in terms of for member of parliament or for council, they have for city council, they have brought in quite a few younger candidates. But also it is a reflection on the fact that a lot of these young guys are popular, but what are they popular for? So you have a lot of people that throw money around in clubs and are known as dealers. But do they have capacity to lead?
Yeah.
And it's a conversation, and we can have that conversation in terms of ED's legacy. But it's the same thing. I argue it's the same thing for CCC, because what you have are freedom fighters, people that are able to get the crowd riled up, but do they have capacity to engage in issues of public policy and administration and lead the country in terms of the direction it needs to go in proper administrative processes? They do not also have that capacity. So the people that make it into parliament in most cases are not the people that have capacity to lead as parliamentarians. But if you're opposition, that means you are a freedom fighter, you're a Tory person, you know how to lead the song and dance. If you're in ZANU-PF, you're aligned to the right person, you have the right resources. So it's a terrible situation we find ourselves in. But to answer your question directly, the ED legacy is not looking really good, unless I know for a fact he's getting the next 5 years. So unless he then decides that, okay, the next 5 years are me showing my capacity and showing or demonstrating the type of leadership that this country should have for whoever takes over. But the way things are, it's not looking particularly good for him.
Sure. You've answered my next question, because it was going to be that question that puts you on the spot, that says some surveys are saying Chamisa has a victory, but you've just said, I know for a fact, you know, that Emmerson's going to have the next 5 years. So So obviously you believe that, you know, and let me ask you this question then, because I was going to ask you a survey's question, but now I'm going to ask you a different question, but still based on that particular statement you made. Mm-hmm. The next 5 years, based on a proper electorate victory that comes from the Zimbabwean Electoral Commission, proper victory, or one where you think that the games will still be at play and that, you know, obviously, you know, ZANU-PF is not going to lose it and that cynicism comes in and they're not going to let go of it and the numbers games will be played. What are you basing your next 5 years decision on?
I am basing it on, number one, when it comes to any game, you need to have the resources, to enter the fight or to enter the conversation. Mm. I do not think CCC has enough resources to give ZANU-PF a proper run for its money. By resources, okay. I mean even able to have their own independent checks and balances in order to ensure that the election is free and fair. So if you can't even ensure that within yourselves, you have no capacity to question the results. Mm. A lot of funders that they had, they do not have the same capacity going into this election. So I don't think they have capacity to properly challenge and engage the electorate. Like I said, like you said, there's 3 months left, and we can't really tell. I mean, we have an idea who I know Fadzai Mahere, because I mean Fadzai Mahere is constituency, Mount Pleasant constituency. So I know for a fact, however things play out in her part in CCC, we will have Fadzai Mahere as the candidate for CCC. Mm. But ZANU-PF, because of its primaries, we've been seeing a lot of their flyers going around, but I can't make heads or tail out of the CCC party. What I know is Chamisa posts a lot of selfies, a lot of, you know, motivations. As a pastor, I probably would want to go to his church, but as my leader, I don't know.
Ah, right. You know what, Tatenda, I'm going to have to bring you back for a lot more of these particular conversations. I've really, really enjoyed it. And I've learned so much, you know, when people read up and look at all sorts of things. And you say that documentary is Al Jazeera, right?
Yes.
I'm going to go look that up as well. But I've learned so much from the conversation tonight. And I have to thank you for coming on to Power Perspective, onto Power 98.7, and being as frank as you are and giving us the kind of insights. And there's a lot of ground I still want to cover. But obviously, I'm going to eat this elephant in small bites. And I'm
Absolutely.
going to have to say to you, you know, don't be surprised if, you know, closer to the election, you're going to be back here with me, and closer to the election, we're going to have to do it again. So I really appreciate the time and the kind of insights you've given us. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me. Look, I don't blame you. If I was you, I'd want to have me back on a show too. Like,
wow. Okay. Thank you so much. Let me say this. You know what I'm saying? Let me just give you, you know, like for that particular last statement that you had. If I were Denzel, I would also want you on my show. You know. Let me say this, Tatenda.
Yes.
Yeah. As for somebody sitting in Zimbabwe, you would also be wanting to be talking to Denzel Taylor as a radio host in this particular country.
Calm down.
Tatenda has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. That's Tatenda, of course, Mareza Harare, Zimbabwe. Political analyst there. What a lovely person. What a wake-up. What an inspiration. And the kind of insights that one got from that particular conversation.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.